It's another episode of Behind the Broker. As it sounds in the title, Behind the Broker is about the kind of ancillary products that help brokers along the way, whether that be with their marketing mindset, anything that isn't the selling of the mortgage. So today I've got Dan Reddish with me from New Age Advisor. Thanks, Dan.
You're welcome, mate. Thanks for having me on. It's been in the pipeline for a while, hasn't it? But
it has, hasn't it? Yeah, we talked about this ages ago, so it's nice to get you on. Yeah. Nice to finally talk about what you do and how you help brokers. So let's talk about New Age Advisor. Tell me about your journey up to now, how it's come to this and what you do.
Yeah, sure. Well, my background going way back to the start was I used to do club nights back in the day, back in the local area and stuff, because that was always my thing, like clubs. And then I just came into a big club one time and thought, I want a piece of this. So I've always had that kind of entrepreneurial kind of thing in my bones, I think. So
yeah,
that was like a passion. I thought I want a piece of this industry kind of thing. So that's what kind of got me into it. I did club nights for about 15 years. I'm from Doncaster in South Yorkshire, places like Leeds and Sheffield, around the Yorkshire area kind of thing. And then, it was promoting stuff, marketing my club nights online. But back then it was like MySpace. Can you remember that?
Back
in the day, when you could have a little...
It's way before my time, mate. I'm far too young.
But then, Facebook came out in like 2004. It just made things, because we used to run around putting posters up, like those massive A-naught posters, like in the middle of the night, dodging the cops, trying to paste it up with a bookie and pasting thing. Yeah. But then, Facebook came out and I could just do what I was doing there, sat on my arse and do it from
Yeah.
So how did that
come about to financial services, and how did that move over?
Yeah, well, I was just doing that for myself and my club nights, and then I thought I'll do it for other people. And my contacts were organically in hospitality, because I was doing like bars and clubs and stuff, and restaurants. And then so I was doing it for them, and then I picked up a few other clients just generally, a couple of mortgage brokers. But then I did that for a good few years, and then COVID hit, and that. Like the hospitality side of it just went like that pretty much overnight. They all had to shut down, didn't they? So that was the point where I realised I just needed to focus on one specific area, which was financial services, because that there's a few things that you need to think about, I think, when you're going for a specific market. And one is the profitability of that market, and obviously financial services tick that box.
It's got to have a need, and we are quite a backward industry in regards to kind of marketing and that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's quite old school generally in the way that it operates, I think, especially in terms of the lead generation side of things. People are doing a lot of the old school stuff that worked really well 20 years ago, but these days there's a new way of doing things, which just makes things a lot more efficient, a lot more time effective.
You know what? It's funny you should say that, actually, because recently this is going to, I don't know if it's as relevant when the podcast comes out, but I was looking at a company yesterday, just had gone pop, and it was awful. You know, it's a horrible situation, but they've been around 22 years, and we were kind of talking about it this morning, dissecting it. I don't know the ins and outs of it. It's not my client, not my business. You know, I didn't really know them before, but we were just saying, like, I think, as you said then, if you don't move with the times, what got you here doesn't get you there, and it's I think that's glaringly obvious when you see really successful that were successful brokerages who then fall by the wayside. I think it's just because they think that they've got it nailed and marketing stays the same, and this is how we pick up our clients. So it's interesting you say that about moving with the times, because it's showing, it's glaringly obvious when you see big older companies go under because they're still doing the same thing.
Yeah, that's part of business, I think, isn't it? It's evolving with the times and change. It's inevitable. Things are going to change. If you think you're just stuck in your ways, you're just going to go extinct, which is the perfect example of like what you've said there. People think that that's the way to do it because it did work really well. And it's just you need to keep up with what's changing. And there's no time than now, and things have changed so rapidly with things like AI and obviously the digital stuff for the past kind of 10 years. But
you know what? AI is a perfect example of how people can embrace some tech or panic, because for us, we are looking at it at the moment in regards to they can do something better than us. That we employ admin teams to do that anyway. So now it's just on the robot. So we'll never lose that human touch of what we're doing. You know, that the nuances of understanding someone's tone and that kind of thing will never be taken by AI. But actually, if we forgot about it, and let other recruiters run in front of us, same as mortgage brokers, we'd fall by the wayside because it's happening, you know. So you embrace it or you fall by the wayside.
Yeah, exactly. That's the mindset, isn't it? But like you say, I think people think it's a scary thing, which it can be, but you can harness it. Yeah, but if you look at it, and like you said, you can't just let AI do everything, because you're going to lose your personality, you're going to lose your ethos, you're going to lose your personal touch, which is the thing that people connect with. But you can kind of have a hybrid model of both, which I think, is the best way to go.
Yeah, exactly. It's embracing it in your day-to-day, isn't it, rather than losing your whole personality and kind of how you exist online. You've got to do a bit of both. That's interesting. Have you started to deal with work with that with your clients and AI? Is that part of your setup yet, or is it happening?
Yeah, definitely. That's a big part of what we do in terms of, like a big part of what we do is establishing like the pain points of a specific market. Like I say, the transition I've done in my business, I used to do digital marketing just for anyone and everyone, but now I just do it for financial services. So I've gone through that transition. So that's a big part of what we're doing in the course, is to show people that from a marketing standpoint, I think it's essential to do that. And a big part of what AI helps with is learning, well, not even learning, just typing in there what are the pain points of a specific market.
Let's track back, because I did jump in and I started banging straight into marketing stuff I'm interested in. Let's just go back journey-wise. Talk to us about New Age Advisor, what it does for brokers. I know we sort of skipped into a little bit then. Talk about what you do, what kind of a platform is it, and what brokers should expect from it.
Yeah, so it's a coaching program, so we're not kind of providing leads for people. That's the whole premise, to help people to self-generate like 5 to 10 plus qualified appointments consistently week after week using digital marketing. But obviously that's the outcome, but obviously there's a lot of things to get to that point. And I think I'd say the first kind of foundational part of what we do is like what I mentioned, which is the most important part, is getting specific as to who you're going after. Because I think so many, probably 95% of firms and advisors are going after the same market, which is just anyone and everyone that will listen. But I think it's difficult to really resonate with anybody specifically when you are that broad and that general. And it's like what they say.
It's interesting, isn't it? When you talk about niches, like we're so niche. People call us financial services recruiters, and we say we're not, we're mortgage recruiters. It's so specific. Yeah. It's so niche. I don't want to be niche with these other people. There's 40,000 financial services, there's 2 mortgage broker recruiters. You know, you've got to be more specific. It's the same for you guys. People would assume mortgages are mortgages, but actually, how important is it for you and your clients when it comes to kind of niching down as to where their skills lie?
Yeah, I think it's from a marketing standpoint, it's essential. There's no downside to it, I see, because I think once you do deal with that specific customer profile day in, day out, you get a lot more efficient at it, because you know exactly where to go to get them what they need, which means makes your life a hell of a lot easier, or the broker's life a lot easier, and you're providing a better service because you're more efficient at it. You're getting them the results quicker and more efficiently. And
I think that's quite a frightening thing for people at the beginning, because we did the same thing. When we decided we're just doing mortgages, that's all we're doing, we're going to say no, we're going to drop all our other clients. That's frightening, because it's money, isn't it? You know, you are still turning away money. So talk to me about the mindset kind of shift you have to get with brokers to understand that. I mean, not everyone has to niche, but if that's your thing, to go into that niche that you have to, and that's and where you target yourself, people are always going to have that fear of leaving money on the table, which we did when we did it. And so talk to me about that. How do you overcome that fear of leaving cash on the table?
Yeah, 100%. I think that is one of the biggest kind of, what would you say, issues people have with doing that. But I think there's two sides of it. Obviously, when you originally start going into a specific niche, people are still going to come to you organically, which they already were. But like the stuff that we're putting out is just going in front of your ideal client. So that's not going to turn anyone off as such, because other people aren't seeing it. It's only your ideal client that's going to see it, because that's the beauty of digital marketing. You can put that message that specifically tailors around that customer profile purely and exclusively in front of that customer profile. But the idea is obviously, like I said before, when you're going into a new market, it wants to be a profitable market. The general market that's coming to you is probably going to be less profitable in terms of the customer value, because it's just general stuff. Because we're going after the most profitable part of your business. So the idea is to get it to a point where your just calendar's full of your most perfect ideal client, and then you've got no time to deal with the kind of lower, and then you can just refer them on. But it makes it easy because you're dealing, like I said before, when you're dealing with that customer profile, you know exactly where to go to get them what they need. So when someone new comes that is not from that customer profile, it's a bit, you have to think out the box and think extra, and it's more work. And
it's interesting when you talk about that, you're like your A client, because we've been through the process before of thinning out our, I do the client side, so I always run the risk of taking on too much. I want to help everyone, you know, and that's just a natural thing. Like, oh, I see the good in every business going, oh, if we did this, if we helped you with this, we could do this. But actually, sometimes you have to stick to your guns and go, look, we deal with A clients, these are all B, you know, A and B clients, for instance. Yeah. C clients have to go somewhere else because you can't deal with everyone. But I suppose that again is that fear of missing out, you know, it's the fear of losing money. But
yeah,
like you said, then that's where the 90% of your money will be when you actually take that inventory of where your money comes from.
Yeah,
it's from the same clients, isn't it? It's the same.
Yeah, well, I think it's a journey to get to that point where your calendar is that full of, like say, your most perfect ideal client. But before you get to that point, you can still take on whatever you want. But I think again, it comes down to the point of business for me is getting client results, number one, and making a profit, number two. I think the number two comes with number one. But when you
you can't reach for profit, can you? Because profit is a reward for doing the other bits right. You can't make that your goal, because it's just it's not a goal; it's a reward for getting
it's
a goal right.
Secondary from helping people, which is the whole point of business, is to solve problems for people, and that comes into the niche, because when you get a specialist, be a specialist in serving that market, you're a lot more, you're a lot better at getting results for that customer profile. So you're providing better results for that customer profile. So
I get that. I mean, like, imagine if I was recruiting mortgage brokers this morning and then working on warehouse people this afternoon, there's no way I can add value to both of those industries. Yeah. Much the same as if you're broken. You can't be an expert on absolutely everything. Well, I mean, there are some amazing brokers out there that do everything, but generally, you need to find what you're good at, don't you? And then really narrow down.
Yeah.
Inch wide, mile deep, is it? I think that's the phrase, when you just really get that sector perfect.
Yeah. Oh, there's that quote from Confucius, isn't it? Man who chases two rabbits catches none. Makes sense, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. So talk to me about the challenges that you're finding with brokers. Like, oh, firstly, I want to ask you a question, because I was thinking about this a minute ago. Do people buy into it straight away? Like, because I think the trouble is everyone looks and they're not getting any leads and they just think everything's a bit bullshit because you can't see it. And I do get that from people when they can't see something, they've been struggling or whatever it is. Do you have to overcome that quite a lot to go, like, it's not bullshit. This is what we do. This is what they're doing. And I will answer that question because I'll have about 10, but do you come up against that objection where people go, I just can't see it. I can't see where people are making money.
Yeah. 100%. Like I say, because people are naturally in any vertical, kind of like we said before, stuck in their ways in a sense. And it's quite a new thing, because I don't think there is anything like what we do in terms of financial services. Well, this is why we put it together. We've not kind of guessed at what people want. We've looked into the market, and there is no real systemized and predictable way to generate qualified appointments consistently. I think a lot of people are like buying leads in. A lot of people are just kind of relying on referrals, which, yeah, they're great because they convert well, but you can't scale a business, I think, on something that's inconsistent.
You know what? I know some great businesses that have scaled, but it is flipping hard. Mm. There are not many.
Yeah.
There aren't many good, big, successful ones to work on. I speak, one of my clients has been there 27 years, never bought a lead, never done any digital marketing, never, but they are one out of 50 that have gone under from doing the same thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's so tough. You're right. Without having other strategies to get that funnel filled of the leads is a tough gig for any broker.
And I think it's the control element as well. Like I said, when you're just relying on referrals, you just got whatever comes your way kind of thing. Like I said before, the whole point of what we do is like a more targeted approach where you just specifically structuring yourself around your most perfect, most profitable, ideal client. And then that means you're
going to... How do people decide where they niche down to that perfect client out of interest? Because obviously everyone's different. Do you look at their back book, or do you look at where they want to be? How do they decide that?
Yeah, like, that kind of really. That's one of the questions we ask. Like, look back at your past like year or your past 6 months of clients that you've helped. Is there any reoccurring themes and where you've been really confident at getting them to where they need to be? Or another big one is if they've got a personal affinity to a specific industry or...
Yeah. If you like it,
You've got to work with people that you like and you get on with, and it just makes life so much more enjoyable when you're dealing with people that you're on a similar kind of wavelength to. So yeah, some people, like literally before this conversation I had with you, I just messaged a guy who's on a course and he's struggling with that. It is a struggle, it's hard to get there, but he's into his fitness stuff. So I was saying, have you thought about like limited company directors that are owners of gyms, for example? He's like, oh yeah, that's a good idea, because that's, like I say, he's got that affinity and he's...
You can literally hunt them down as well, can't you? Like, it's so easy to get that niche now with marketing, yeah. How to, well, that's another, like, you know, job occupation.
Yeah, that's another tick box. Like I said, one of the tick boxes is profitability. Another is easily identifiable online. So, like, yeah. I say, LinkedIn, you can just type in gym owners, limited company directors in like Sales Navigator, and it'll bring you a massive list of them. And you would just hit that list, just connect with that list and start to do some outreach to them.
And out of interest, when people join the group and they're in it, I know obviously it depends on how much action you take. And this is really important, actually, if anyone's listening takes any bit of advice. You can get as many coaches as you want, but if you don't do anything, you're going to get nothing from it. You'll moan about your coach all day long. I've actually just left my coach 2 years. They were phenomenal. They changed my life, changed my business. But they said, that's just because you did what we told you to do. Yeah. You can't. There's so many people that go, I've paid you and you know, nothing's happening.
Yeah.
So how do you... I know that's a mindset thing as well, but people have to take action, don't they? You can't just pay a coach and expect to get leads.
Yeah, that's it. I think, like you say, a lot of people, we've had both sides of it, and it's the same content for people that have, like, we've had people like a lady called Jenny in our group who's like, who grew her business by 200% in like 3 months, or we've got people who have signed up, paid me and never logged onto the bloody thing. So they're not going to get results. But
and they're the ones who moan about it, go, that doesn't work.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I would rather not take the money off people like that, because if they do.
Yeah, I know. We get like that. We just, it makes sense. Out of interest, when you talked about like the Jennies and the like, is it a similar curve when people start to make money from this, or is it very generous? I know, like I said, I know it's on action. Assuming everyone does a similar action, do you generally see the same sort of curve going up? Can you tell people like, don't worry, this is the valley of despair, but you're getting there. Like, you are this close. Like, everyone does it here. Or is it pretty random?
Some people do sign up and then they don't touch it for 3 months and then they'll crack on with it 3 months later and they'll start to...
Assuming you do it and start, is it like, if you start here, in 3 months' time, you're going to get some leads. You've got, or you've got, like, where you're paying for yourself already. You just... People are always nervous about it, but I mean, I love coaching. I think everyone should 100% buy into it. But is it like you said, then you answered the question, but it's quite random, is it, to how that kind of curve goes up to when people get like success from it?
Yeah, because like I say, people do start at different points. But to answer your question, if they did all start at the same point, then yeah, it would be a similar kind of timeline. Yeah. It usually takes like about 6 weeks roughly for people to start to get like reliable, consistent flow coming in.
I know some people might listen and think, oh, 6 weeks is a long time. And I can't reiterate this enough to people. Like, the best companies we work with, the most successful businesses, are relentlessly consistent with marketing that takes fucking years. Mm-hmm. Excuse me, but do you know what I mean? It takes so long and people want it now. Like, I paid you, where's the thing? Like, this stuff takes time. Like, to get good at something takes time. To nurture leads takes time. I think, I'm sure you have to come across it a lot with these kind of objections where people go, I want it now, like I'll pay, where's my leads? Like, you're not buying a lead, you're buying the knowledge base to get better at this job, but it's still going to take a bit of time.
Yeah, exactly. And it's that skill, I think, which is the most valuable skill in any business that you can have, is the skill to be able to produce your own business. Cause you can't constantly rely on outside sources to grow your business, I think. You need to take control of that. That's always been my philosophy on it anyway. I know it's not everyone's, but for me, that's instrumental.
Both models, and I was just not the old buying leads model, but I know really great guys who work the model, works really well. It's a machine, you know, they know, but if you love that, it's 10% conversion, it's an internet lead, it's not guaranteed, it's a tough gig, you're finding some other people. Like you say, if you can actually start to get those leads through, start to get the referral system through. And actually, that's business, isn't it? You know, when you don't have to buy, when you have to pay as much as second year to get the same amount of business, that's how businesses get bigger.
Yeah, 100%. Like you said, there are some decent lead providers out there. I'm not knocking it as such, but...
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm saying that, I think...
And there are people who solely rely on it. But I think leads get a bad name because there are also some bad brokers. who rely on leads, and then it'll be the leads' fault. But again, it's action, isn't it? If you convert a 10% and you fuck the other 90% off and never use it again, then yeah, absolutely, it's a bad lead. But or it's a bad lead source. But a lot of it's down to the mindset of the broker.
Yeah, 100%. But yeah, I think when you generate your own as well, those leads, obviously, like you say, 10% is pretty much the industry standard when you're buying leads in. Mm. But when you're kind of generating those leads yourself, you're building that trust and you're building that rapport, and you're pre-qualifying them for, like our process, for example, before you invest time ringing them. Because I think that's a big problem with a lot of brokers. They're wasting a shit ton of time ringing crap quality leads that are just
qualified leads.
Yeah. So yeah, this stuff, like the conversion rates on these kind of leads are a lot better because, like I say, they're aware of who you are and what you do before you get them on the phone. So which gets them over.
Well, that's a big part of it, isn't it? The rapport building is done, or the trust bit at the beginning of any sales call, whether you're selling ice creams, mortgages, recruitment services, whatever it is, it's the trust at the beginning. You've broken down that barrier, haven't you? Because they've seen you already. They understood you. They understand you. Understand them. It's a, you know, it's a massive win over phoning someone off a number they don't even recognize.
It's all about trust, isn't it? Especially in any industry, but financial services specifically, I think, because it's a massive financial commitment, isn't it? It's the biggest financial commitment
anyone's
ever going to make. So yeah, they need to feel that trust to do business.
So let's talk about the other side of the business, which is mindset. I know you've got a partner, business partner of you, or someone in the business who deals heavily on the mindset side of things. Talk to me about the mindset shifts that brokers need, maybe from just being not successful before. What do they need to do? What do you teach them? What's part of the course where they can change that? Because for me, sorry, before you answer, I get it. I mean, I've got this mindset, it's everything behind me, is before we start doing these things. I genuinely believe it. Yeah, it changed everything for me once I learned that I was the best kept secret in recruitment. I need to get out there. People do care about what you think. But that was a complete shift that a coach needed to do for me. So talk to me about that. Talk to me about how you help people to do that, make that shift.
Yeah, well, I'm a similar kind of example, really. I bought a course back in, I think it was about 2015, 2016, something like that. That was like the first course I ever bought. And yeah, well, just doing that was a mindset thing alone, because it was a big investment for me and I couldn't really afford it, but I did it. But it was the best investment I've ever made, to be fair. But yeah, they did.
First ever personal development course I put on a credit card, and it was the best money I ever spent.
Yeah.
I had interest on it and everything, and it was definitely worth it.
Well, I think I've made like a 500x return on that. So that little bit, because I did it on a credit card, but it cost a lot less than
that interest.
But yeah, that was, they did a lot on mindset. So that got me into that mindset that it works, and that, overcoming problems in the right kind of frame of mind is essential to business. But I was going to kind of include it myself in the course, because I've obviously, it's worked for me. I've got a decent level of understanding on it. But yeah, I spoke to Ross, who I'd come across before from one of my other clients. He did some work. He came into my other client's business and did some like workshops. I got him to do those courses. And the main, it does a few different kind of modules, but one of the main ones is why you do it. The overarching kind of reason, which I think is, again, a really valuable thing to have as to why you get up in the morning and do this, because making money is not a why, is it? I don't think it's the need to be a high level.
Out of interest with the why thing, right? And I know lots of people don't agree with me about this, because I don't, when people do the old pitch to the kids and they say, this is my why, and I always think, are you telling me if you didn't have those kids, you'd be lying in bed now doing nothing? I think your why is much deeper than what you think it is. Actually, because when I broke mine down, God, I love my kids. And yes, I want to leave a legacy for them and that kind of thing. It's just, it's like the base standard is like, why? Because I love my kids, because I want my kids. But actually, so if I didn't have them, why then? And then why? And then actually, like, mine is more about being validated and respected by my peers. And that actually brought down, it's more of an ego thing, which I'd never even thought of before. But you really have to, break it down quite a lot, don't you? It's not just like an easy ask, because I love my wife and kids.
Yeah. Like you say, that's the kind of obvious answer, I guess, which doesn't take much deep diving into your soul to pull out, does it? But
it sounds really bad, but I always do believe that when I go, right, so if you never had children, Are you telling me you would not own a business? There's like no one without kids that doesn't own a business isn't successful. Yeah. Like, I think your why is so much more, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. For me, a big part of it is just feeling. It's a similar. If I don't work out, I feel like shit. If I don't work, I feel like shit. I need to do it to feel. What's the word? Just to feel like I've like achieved something and
proud of myself. Yeah, yeah.
Because if I don't, like I say, I just feel a bit worthless if I don't work for a couple of days. That's why I don't like going on holiday for too long, because I like my routine. I like to work to feel like, just to feel right in a way.
A bit like me, I'm a creature of habit. I have to work on holiday because people say you shouldn't work on holiday because you don't want to get stressed. But actually, I would be stressed not knowing what was happening at work. Mm. And also, I'm not digging holes for a living. Do you know what I mean? I love my job. It's a nice. I'm not doing anything horrible on there. I'm not.
Every life is about doing stuff that fulfills you and makes you happy. Like a lot of people say, if you're working too hard, you're going to burn out. But if you're doing something that you love, then obviously there's a balance, isn't it? I think everything's a balance, but you can't.
And I respect people who talk about burnout, and I understand it. I do feel like if you're doing a lot of the wrong thing, then you're going to get burnt out a lot quicker. Like, for instance, if you're doing 40 mortgages a month and you're doing your own admin, and then all of a sudden you're burnt out. You're not burnt out because you're 40 mortgages. You're burnt out because you're sat on the fucking phone doing your admin. You should be, you need to clear half your desk, don't you? Mm. If I could do this all day long, my energy for meeting clients, doing podcasts, chatting about mortgages and adding value to the industry is so vast. I could do it 24 hours a day. Mm. But give me a bit of admin to do and I hit rock bottom and I fall asleep in a second. So there is something to be said. I'm not saying burnout isn't a thing. I just think that people can take a lot off their plates by doing the thing that they're really good at and the thing that actually makes them money as well. Like the most, brass tacks of it is actually the money making bit is the energy bit.
Yeah, because a lot of people who run business in any industry, I think there's two sides of it. There's the side that just work their ass off, working like 12 hours a day and just don't really get any closer because, like you say, they're working hard, but they're not productive. There's a big difference between working hard and being productive, I think, which...
Well, we talked about this earlier on, actually, about like giving yourself room to grow. If you're working in your business all the time, being the admin, the marketing, the social, the social guy, the guy that has to go out and do the networking, the guy that has to be on hold to Santander, the guy that's moaning about the CRM system, like... You're not building anything, are you? You're just working in a business. You've got a job.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I used to be. I used to do work my ass off,
I did it for 10 years.
I think you. I was going to say, I think you have to go through that process, but actually, I don't think you do. I think now.
What I really needed was a coach 10 years before telling me I'm a busy idiot. That's what I need.
That's the difference, yeah.
If I go back in time, genuinely, the one thing I would do, I would have got a coach early on in my career. People tend to do it when they've hit a road bump, when they've done all right for a few years, and actually, you don't know what you don't know. I would say, not just because you do it, and I'm not blowing smoke at your ass, I would just say, look at coaches.
Yeah.
Because you don't know what you don't know in business. You just think, I'm just plodding on. This is how every business owner feels. And you're so far from the truth, but you're so insular and your business is so you that you have no idea what you're missing out on.
Yeah, 100%. I'd agree with that. Like you say, I've said that so many times. I wish I would have done it earlier kind of thing, got a coach. Like I said, that was the first time when I mentioned that big investment I made. I got like a hybrid coach, similar to the model I do, where you got like live coaching as well as like self-teach stuff. But that was like the best investment I've ever made. And like you said, I'm not saying that because that's what I do. I'm saying it because I believe in the model, and that's why.
True, isn't it? Well, you wouldn't be a coach if you didn't believe in coaching. I also think that you're sort of halfway there with the mindset stuff and the people you speak to, because they know they're not the finished article because they've come to you already. Mm. Like, for instance, everyone I meet on a coaching course is brilliant, but then they're also of the same ilk as me because they know they're not finished. So our mindsets are already very similar, so you're kind of surrounding yourself with similar people because you want to learn, you want to get better. You surround yourself with people that want to get better is a great position to be in.
That is a big part of mindset as well, isn't it? Knowing that
you have a fairly big community in your...
Say that again, Marcus.
No, you're right. Do you have like a community thing as well where your guys bounce off each other and do you find that they are similar because they're literally on the same coach? So is that useful for your guys, where they can bounce off each other? It's too one-man band in mortgages. You know what I mean? There's too many people not just holding on to what they know. I don't think anyone else is willing to share information. Talk to me about that kind of community feel.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we want to attract people who've got that mindset that it's, yeah, you can't just hold back information. Well, you can, but if you've got that mindset, you'll not get anything back. I think it's like karma in life. If you don't, if you've got that closed mindset, you're not going to receive anything back. But if you're willing to give it, then you will get it back. And that's, yeah, that's a big part of what people get value from. Obviously, we give, obviously, our coaching, but people get that kind of like a mastermind kind of element.
Yeah, mastermind, yeah, absolutely.
Learning from people that are like
also
successful than them.
You learn from other people's mistakes, I think, is as important as their wins. Like, celebrate people's wins and learn from their mistakes, and it saves you doing it. It's nice. You've got a communal win and learn situation, haven't you? Not just you on your own.
Yeah, because that's the whole point of what we do. Obviously, we try to cut that learning curve. But, yeah, they get that from other people in the community. So, yeah, we do, like, live coaching, like, group coaching session, like, twice every month. And we've got, like, a Facebook group where people ask questions about, obviously, the course, but about anything to do with the job, with the role. Like, people asking stuff about networks and things, and other people chip in and say, yeah, try this network, or I've had a crap experience with this one, or just what's worked for them and what's not worked for them. So, yeah, it's people get a lot of value from that side of it, I think.
Amazing. And I've kept you for long enough. I do appreciate your time. I could waffle on all day especially the mindset stuff and the whys and that kind of thing. But if you could, I ask everyone this at the end, if you could speak to a broker now who maybe is on the edge of looking at coaching or maybe just struggling, I mean, what would you suggest to people, especially in this market? People are finding it tough. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
What kind of one bit of advice could you give them that you think would put them in good stead?
I think it's like what we've touched on, getting specific as to who your customer profile is. I said before, I think probably 95% of your competition are going for that generalist market, just anyone and everyone. So that just instantly knocks your competition down by like 95%. And doing that work into the psychology of that customer profile and digging into the psychological triggers as to what makes them buy and what gets their attention, and then putting together a message that resonates specifically with that customer profile and building an audience of them and putting that message exclusively in front of them, which is what you can do with digital marketing. So
amazing. Good. And if people want to get hold of you, Dan, how do they get hold of you? I mean, all your socials will be on everything we post on here. We'll find you on here. But just if people are listening, how can they get hold of you and speak to you about the New Age Advisor?
Yeah, generally Facebook or LinkedIn at Dan Reddish, or my main website is danreddishconsulting.com. So, yeah.
Smashing. Good. Well, thank you very much, Dan. I genuinely appreciate it. I think that's absolutely flown by for me, because I love talking about that kind of thing, especially coaching, you know, and I think it's so poignant that, especially when the market's harder as well, I think when it's easy, and people seem to sharp shop instead of think about ways they can improve. So really, really useful. Thank you very much. Hopefully a lot of brokers get some value from it as well. But thank you, everyone, listening on Spotify and watching on YouTube. As discussed, all of Dan's socials will be on all of the pages wherever you look at this. And so if you need to speak to him, you can. And I'll catch up with you soon. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you very much, Marcus. Appreciate it, Paul. I'll speak to you soon.